WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number three of the program here on Monday morning. That means it's time to speak with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Doing all right. How was your weekend?
It was amazing, actually. It was even with the rainy Saturday that we had, I was able to attend a lot of different events with my colleagues and really get to celebrate a lot of people here in the city. Really, we got to start off on Friday at the Whaling Museum. They opened up a new Cape Verdean exhibit. It's really a two-parter. It starts off at the ground floor, and then there's up on the third floor an extension. Part of the exhibit, really, they took pieces from people in the community. So some of my own family actually donated, thinking of my great-grandmother's wedding dress that's actually now in the New Bedford Whaling Museum.
That's pretty cool.
And my church that most people are familiar with, Our Lady of the Assumption, which is the first Cape Verdean Roman Catholic Church in North America, is heavily displayed throughout the Whaling Museum, which was originally on Water Street, and then after the flooding over there, they moved up to South 6th Street now. I believe it's South 6th Street. It's one of those funny things where I just happen to know where the church is. I just drive there or walk
right
there.
I'm like that with so many places. Like where somebody asked me, speaking of the same area, somebody asked me about where 6s and 7s is located the other day. And I was like,
same street actually as my church. So that's funny. Yeah, same reference. But so that was a really great community event. It was free to the public. And I believe they had over 300 or more people kind of coming into the flooding through the Whaling Museum, and really getting to enjoy the exhibits and really be in community together. And during my remarks, I was sharing how I've been, obviously as a Cape Verdean American, I'm one of the Cape Verdean Americans here in New Bedford that has not made it back to Cape Verde yet. It's one of my bucket list goals to travel and see Cape Verde. My family is originally from Fogo in Brava. And so I was mentioning to them getting to actually see a lot of the history here. One of the excuses I use often when people are like, why haven't you gone? Is that here in New Bedford, we're so blessed to have like such rich culture and history and traditions that I feel like I don't even have to go to Cape Verde. But it just the spirit and of community was so alive on that Friday. I really now want to grab a ticket that, with the Whaling Museum, because they're actually planning a trip to Cape Verde this year. I think at that event, they were saying they had 6 tickets left. Maybe I'll go with them.
I mean, this would be the year to go, right?
Yes, it's for their 50th anniversary. Yes, of Cape Verdean independence. That's true, yeah. A lot of different anniversaries, because then the following day on Saturday, we were able to celebrate Cheryl McCormick Dance Academy. Myself and Councilor-at-Large Linda Morad were able to attend the dance recital in 60 years. 60 years they had celebrated their Diamond Jubilee, I believe they called it. I've known Cheryl McCormick for some time now, and she's just an amazing woman. I invoke our city motto of Lucem Diffundo, of I diffuse light. And I can't think of someone that better exemplifies that motto of just someone who walks into a room and really lights it up. So she was remarking during the recital that she started off at 9 years old, just wanting to twirl a baton, and her father said, fine, we'll send her for 1 year, and she said it's been a long year.
Yeah, we had a story about her recently, and just the outpouring of comments and people in the community, like, you can just tell how beloved she is.
Well, yeah, just when you think over a span of 60 years, the amount of different generations of families that have come through her dance academy that she's been able to help mentor and support. And, you know, just like anything, you don't finish with a child once they're, you know, done with your program. You know, you stay with them even in adulthood, and a lot of times when they become adults, they have children and they bring them back to be a part of the same dance academy that helped nurture them. So you see a lot of that, and I think in this showcase as well, a lot of past dancers came back to perform with their, you know, so on and so forth. So you see that generational pull throughout the years, and I think that's so special. And then we also got to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Irish Monument down on Clark's Point with the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick, myself, Councillor at Large Naomi Carney. I know that Ward 1 Councillor Leo Choquette was also in attendance at the actual site. Even with the rain, they had some tents up, and we were joined also by the original, the son of the Nobel Peace Prize recipient, John Hume. His son Ethan was able to attend and really get to share some remarks. So it was kind of a nice full circle moment there for that family, and getting to be able to recognize, you know, the Celtic Cross and really what the Irish immigrants that have come to New Bedford and really helped build this city, and how powerful the immigrant story is here in our city and woven into the very fabric of this city. So just yet another amazing celebration this Saturday, as well as my colleague Ward 4 Councillor Derek Baptiste was able to attend an event hosted by the Zeiterion Theater and the New Bedford Symphony Orchestra. It was called Lift Us Up. It was a Juneteenth event and a spoken word series. And I was able to poke my head in very shortly, trying to bounce around to all the different events. But that's why I'm very fortunate to have the colleagues that I have, that were able to kind of spread ourselves out to all the different events, to be able to support all the organizations and community leaders that are doing such amazing work in our city.
And that, I mean, and even then, that's just some of the stuff that was going on.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I know
just
they had
sprinkle.
The Day of Portugal things going on,
yes,
at the Peace Grounds.
This weekend,
And of course, they had the No Kings protests taking place as well, which I guess were pretty well attended despite the weather.
Yeah, and to touch on the Day of Port, I know that my colleagues, councilors, Naomi Carney and War II Councilor Marie Jester were able to attend the Day of Portugal events as well. I'm glad you mentioned that. I wasn't able to attend, but yes, I forgot to mention that as well. But yes, and then obviously the No Kings protests were happening, and just so much going on around the South Coast in general as we head into the summer.
Considering, you know, what the weather was and all these things kind of went off without a hitch, is still very impressive. So in addition to all of the work that you did this weekend, I know you and your colleagues have also been very busy kind of hammering down the budget here.
Yeah, so we had our final budget hearing, and so now tomorrow, actually, yes, tomorrow, June 17th, I was like, what day is, is our final day to submit cuts to the budget. So as a reminder, you know, unlike other municipalities, we're not allowed to add to the budget or move money around. The only authority that we have as city councilors is to reduce, cut from the budget, and then eventually, obviously, approve said budget. So that's really the framework. Because sometimes I get a question from individuals that are like, well, why do you guys only cut things? And why don't you ever just do this? Or why don't you do that? And it's like, well, we can't. And I think we kind of touched on this, you know, last week during our segment about why sometimes we do cut certain things, with the thought process of, well, we're not allowed to move it, but that's the thought process behind why we cut here, because we were able to or what have you. But I think this year, because of how the administration has divvied up a lot of the accounts, it's a lot easier for us too to be able to really fine tune some of the areas. Like, you know, for example, the Department of Facilities and Fleet Management used to carry a lot of different contracts for different programs or other, you know, contracts that the city holds. And now they've spliced up certain things into their own private account. That way we can specifically see, well, this is for this specific item, whether it's, you know, for Sullivan's Ledge or if it's for the Zeiterion Theater or, you know, you name it. They all have their own separate account now. So that way, if we're wanting to make a cut, for example, to a contractual services line in DFFM. Not saying that I'm letting you know I'm making a cut to DFFM.
It's just an example, folks.
Just an example. I don't want to, but we can say, well, it's because we feel as though you don't need as much for, you know, copiers or printers, or, you know, your cell phone line is too, whatever the case may be. It's a little more targeted in that regard, as opposed to what we've seen the administration do, where they say, oh, well, they cut this much from this line and that's going to affect this, you know, mandated cost. And it's like, well, you don't have to take it from that mandated
right.
cost.
You can, that's where you're applying it.
Yeah.
Not a,
So I think right now, obviously, it's really, really crunch time for us. I actually have today off for a host of reasons. I have a few meetings that I'm taking. So I took it off from what I mean by that. I took it off from my day job. So as I mentioned before, obviously, I work at the DTA. That's my main job during the day. And then so today I felt the need to actually take it off so I can focus primarily on city budget issues and really finalize all those numbers to then submit for tomorrow's final budget submission cuts.
So, I mean, I think I might already know the answer to this, but do you think things would work better if the council was able to add money or move money around? Would you rather see it be that format than opposed to the current one?
It's a good question. I think we would have to start sooner. I think it could work better, honestly.
I mean, I think any elected official would rather have more control of the budget if they had their say.
Oh, of course. But the only concern that I would have, which is why I'm saying if we were to go that way, we should start sooner, is just because the thought process of, you know, again, I think everyone often remarks that there's 11 personalities on the council, and then you add in the mayor, that's, you know, the 12th personality that you have to deal with when it comes to something like the budget, especially when you're talking about $500 million, and, well, really more than $500 million in this situation. But so for me, I think it would be better, honestly. I would really encourage that, because a lot of times when we are looking, you know, even I think back to the last year when I had a lot of issues with the school committee budget, for example, I had no issue with actually the amount of money that the school was spending at the time. It was really more so an equity issue. And, you know, I've had conversations with Superintendent O'Leary and Deputy Superintendent Unkst since then, because, you know, you're looking at different schools and you're looking at staffing and you're looking at, you know, where the money's shifting. And it's like, well, I wish I could move this here. And, you know, obviously the school committee is a, you know, a separate elected body, and they get very touchy about, you know, stay in your lane, don't talk about our things. But I'm just using that as an example of a situation where I looked at, okay, well, I wish I could move this money around. It's not necessarily that I want to cut anything. It's just that I would really rather this be here and this be there to really show that, hey, if we're going to spend this money, let's spend it so that way the taxpayers are actually seeing the benefit of it, and that people are actually seeing the services being that they're actually paying for. So yeah, but in that regard too, because of all the, you know, different priorities that individuals have, I think that process would take a little longer of trying to shuffle things around and move it around. So I think it would take us a lot longer to go through that process.
And it would be more work for the counselors, because as it is right now, they, you know, the department heads do all the work and they bring it to you, and then you just have to understand what it is that they're doing. So you've got to have to be there kind of every step of the way with the work that they're doing too. Now this would require a charter change though to do this, right?
Yes.
And so I know that there's been talk of a charter review coming up. If that does happen, is this something that you think should be part of that charter review process?
Potentially. The other reason why I would potentially caution to change something like as significant as this in the budget is because of the fact that we're considered part-time. Although many of us work full-time, I often say if you do this job right, it is a full-time job. You're on call 24/7. So depending on, it's one of those situations, just depending on the situation, would someone who's elected be able to put in the work and effort that would be required to do all of that work? Well, and then also for our staff in the office, it would be a whole new system for them as well. I think it's worth the discussion, of course. So something that we could potentially look into, and I believe a number of my colleagues would be interested in it because, as you pointed out, it would give us a little bit more authority and a little bit more power, essentially, in how these tax dollars are moved around and actually invested. And I think one of the biggest gripes you hear often during this budget session time is certain departments that are neglected that we feel we should be investing more in that we don't see, and then other departments that we feel we've invested too much in that we'd like to pull back from. And then our only recourse for that is to say, okay, well, we're going to cut from it. And it's unfortunate that sometimes we'd like to cut to add to a different department, but we can't do that. And we can't necessarily rely on the administration to say, okay, well, we'll leave the money in that department if you transfer it to this one. No, it doesn't work that way. So instead, we might cut from somewhere and hope that they understand, catch the drift that this council doesn't believe you should be investing in this area. That was a lot. I don't know if that made sense, but.
But part of that brought up a question that I don't think I've ever asked any counselor that I will ask you, but we got to take a break and then the news, okay. So I'm really going to make you sweat it out. And folks, I'm not going to tell him during the break what I'm going to ask him. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back with Council President Burgo in just a few moments.
More measles cases in the U.S. CDC workers back on the job and a new report about the Dirty Dozen.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Senator Elizabeth Warren calling for DHS Secretary Kristi Noem's resignation after a fellow senator was forcibly removed from one of her press conferences in Los Angeles last week. Video showed California Democratic Senator Alex Padilla being handcuffed and taken to the ground during Noem's press conference. Warren said it's time for Kristi Noem to resign. Warren also posted on Facebook that, quote, every day that goes by, Donald Trump is making our nation look more and more like a fascist state. The annual Dirty Dozen list from the Environmental Working Group's 2025 Shopper's Guide to Pesticides in Produce says 96% of samples of 12 non-organic fruits and vegetables had detectable levels of more than 200 different pesticides. The EWG 2025 Dirty Dozen list includes spinach, strawberries, kale, collards, mustard greens, grapes, peaches, cherries, nectarines, pears, apples, blackberries, blueberries, and potatoes. The health advocacy organization has compiled the report for nearly two decades by analyzing government food safety data. Police in Buffalo, New York, have a Brooklyn man in custody charged in the death of his girlfriend.
Authorities say 32-year-old John Rousseau walked into a Buffalo police station last week telling cops his girlfriend was dead at a house on New York Avenue in Midwood. The Daily News reports NYPD officers went to the home where they found 26-year-old Dana Jean dead with an apparent wound to the neck. The ME ruled the death a homicide but is still investigating the cause of death. Rousseau is charged with murder and weapons possession. I'm Larry Kofsky.
Health officials have issued warnings in the D.C. area about a traveler infected with measles who landed at Dulles International Airport and traveled throughout the area in the last week. The D.C. Health Department has listed on its website various locations the person visited. The international traveler landed at Dulles on June 8th. Virginia health officials say they are working to identify people who may be exposed that had contact with him on different flights. Health officials said that there have been multiple measles cases in the D.C. area within the last few weeks. How dirty are beards?
Research has shown that beards often do indeed host dense microbial populations bolstered by a moist place for them to thrive. It's been an issue in the healthcare field where there have been mixed results over how hygienic beards really are. Some early studies raised concerns that facial hair may be home to more harmful bacteria, but others have shown no difference between bearded and clean-shaven workers. If beards are cleaned regularly and well-maintained, it greatly reduces the chance for harmful bacteria to grow. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Over 460 employees at the CDC are getting their jobs back after being laid off. Lisa Carton has details.
The Department of Health and Human Services said reinstatement notices were sent out this week. HHS did not give details about the rehiring decisions. Officials have confirmed that around 200 of the reinstated workers were from the CDC's National Center for HIV, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and Tuberculosis Prevention. Another 150 workers were from the CDC's National Center for Environmental Health. I'm Lisa Carton.
WBSM Sports.
After the Red Sox beat the Yankees 2-0 yesterday, designated hitter Rafael Devers has been traded to the San Francisco Giants. Devers spent his entire 9-year career with the Sox and was the last player from Boston's 2018 World Series championship team.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
Your forecast for this morning includes a blend of sun and clouds, winds light out of the southeast, and a high near 72. For tonight, we're expecting mostly cloudy skies, your low near 56. And for Tuesday, a mix of sun and clouds with a slight chance of a shower, your high near 74. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Kelly Bates on New Bedford's News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
I'm Mike Roberts. WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station and get breaking news alerts and all of our content on the WBSM app. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven.
You are listening to the Tim Weisberg Show on WBSM.
All right, welcome back in, and if you're looking for a nice meal today, it's going to be a decent day, but you want to get yourself a little something that's going to make you feel better about going back to work for the week, stop by Brax Grill and Tap. Brax in both Taunton and Brockton, and then, of course, Brax Tavern in Middleborough. They've got great lunch specials starting at $12.99, and really $11.99 if you want to get the beer and the burger special, but $12.99 for the pasta of the day, for the half pizza and salad combo, for burgers, for the pasta of the day. So many different things you can get, and you can also get things like their brisket chili, their kale soup, their clam chowder, all kinds of great stuff. I recommend the one-pound meatball, but then, you know, it's hard to go back to work after eating 1 pound of meat. But there's a lot of great things to choose from. Check them out online, BraxGrillAndTap.com, or follow all three restaurants on Facebook. Brax Grill and Tap in Taunton and Brockton, and Brax Tavern in Middleborough. All right, we are talking with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo, and I said I was going to ask you this question, and so we were talking about the work that goes into being a counselor, and do you think it would be a full-time position? Could it be a full-time position in New Bedford like it is in other places?
That's a good question. I've been asked before in regards to that. What I've said in regards to whether or not it should be a full-time position here in New Bedford, yes, we are a city. I just don't believe we are a big enough city where we require a full-time city council. Yes, there are advantages to it. Obviously, if I were able to focus just mainly on this job and not have to work another job to afford to live and live here in New Bedford. But, I think it's okay having a part-time city council, part-time legislator, because of how small of a city we are.
And you already have enough people complaining about what you get paid for the part-time work that you do, so.
Well, yeah, there's that as well, too, because then if we did become full-time, the pay would obviously have to increase to accommodate our full-time work, I guess, in that regard. And as I mentioned before, even though we are considered part-time and we're paid part-time, the number of counselors that do this work no, it's full-time, and we already do the work. So you're already getting full-time counselors, for the most part, for part-time pay. In that regard, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of mentality. I've been asked that question before, and some people have mixed reviews about it. Just like, the same thing where I've been asked before whether or not the council should now be 4 years instead of 2 years, and I disagree with that. I think that we're fine at 2 years. I encourage, us going back to the ballot box every 2 years to do a check-in. I think it's important for our democracy to have the voters come out and to really be able to have the opportunity to say, yes, this is my elected body. This is who represents me.
And so, and you might feel differently, you know, during the slow time of year as opposed to when it's the busy time of year, which is, you know, budget season. And so, as you said, the final cuts are due tomorrow. Do you feel like you and your colleagues are in a good place in the conversation that you've been having?
Yes. And the other part, too, is cuts are due tomorrow, but a lot can happen, obviously, between tomorrow and the actual cut night, which happens on Monday, June 23rd. So even after cuts are submitted, a lot more research still goes into the budget. You might submit a cut just preemptively, and because you haven't had a chance to sit down and meet with the department head, or you submitted a cut and you're thinking about it more and you got more data, or, you know, even sometimes our financial team that continues to work throughout this process to send us more information, as much information as possible to us, might give you something and you're like, oh, okay, well, now looking at this, let me meet with this department head. And so then you meet with this department head between now and, you know, in this case, the 23rd for cut night, and you determine, okay, well, this is actually a bad cut. I don't want to do this anymore. And so there have been situations where on cut night, the sponsor of the cut has withdrawn their cut and has said, oh, never mind, I don't want to do this anymore. And then the clerk just reads the next cut. So that does happen as well, too. So even though cuts are submitted on, you know, in this case, the 17th this year, between the 17th and the 23rd, more meetings will take place between counselors, department heads, the CFO in the mayor's office, and the mayor. You know, more priorities will be discussed, and a lot of changes can happen between now and the 23rd.
So you can withdraw a cut, but you can't add any cuts to what you've already submitted.
Correct. Correct. Yes.
And is some of that, I guess, politicking within the council for one council to say, well, I heard you're going to make a cut to this, and here's why I don't think you should do that. Is there internal discussion, or is it just really in talking to the department heads, the mayor, and the financial people?
It's more so just talking with department heads. I think, you know, at least in my experience, I can only really speak for myself, I haven't talked much with my colleagues after cuts have been submitted, because after that point, the cuts have, you know, the deadline for cuts have been submitted, and now essentially we're just waiting until the night that we all vote. And that's a long process of...
And there's conversations that happen on that night between the councils.
Oh, yes, a lot of discussion, and each individual cut, because that process too, I think you've seen one of those nights where what happens is we start off with the highest cut. And what I mean by that, you know, we'll just, again, I'll beat up on DFFM today. Again, to Director Vieira, this is not any way of
just
a precursor
an example.
To you yep. at all. I think, again, just if I could mention that Jennifer Vieira is doing an amazing job. Her department, especially Department of Facilities and Fleet Management, do amazing work for our city. But just as an example, if we were to cut, you know, let's say $5 million from, you know, whichever account, I won't even get specific so that way people don't get freaked out and think I'm actually doing that, but $5 million from this account, and someone else submitted a cut for $3 million, and someone else submitted a cut for $5.5 million. So we would start with the $5.5 million because that's the highest, and then we work our way. So if it doesn't reach the magic number of six, that's the majority, we go to the next highest, which in that case would be $5 million. And if that doesn't get six votes, then it goes to three. But each time we discuss a cut, each time a counselor can discuss it. Because I'm sure you often might hear me say, like, oh, counselor so-and-so on their first, or counselor so-and-so on their second. Everyone gets to speak at least up to two times on each cut that's submitted. So even if we're talking about the same account, if that first vote that we discussed doesn't pass, and now we're on to the second proposed cut on that same account, it starts all over again. So then now, if that counselor just spoke twice on that last cut, they get to speak twice again on this cut if they want to. So a lot of discussions do take place on cut night, which I think is important, especially for those who actually do stay up with us. You know, last year, you know, past midnight, really watching and getting to understand why someone's taking a vote and why something's getting cut and why something's getting replaced. It's one of the main reasons why I get frustrated with the administration, because we make it very clear why we're doing certain things, why this is being cut, why this is being done. on, and then it gets twisted up, and they're like, they don't know what they're doing. They're doing this haphazardly. They have no recourse. They have no reason. They are just making things up as they go. And it's like, well, no, we had a very thought out, clear process. We explained it on the floor multiple times. I know you probably didn't stay up and listen, and you just are going with your talking points to try to help yourself. But, you know, obviously, if you have the time, everything's recorded. You can go back and listen to past council cut nights and listen to the speeches that people give for their explanation of why certain things are cut or why sometimes cuts are withdrawn. You know, one example I would give of a withdrawn cut that was submitted that we later learned why it was withdrawn. There was a cut originally submitted to our cable access department, which the majority of their revenue that they receive to operate comes from Comcast.
From the cable company, yeah.
So even if you make cuts there, the money just sits there. It doesn't go back to the general fund. It's money that comes from users of Comcast. So that cut was withdrawn because it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Right, why you
so
cut it?
That's a part of, as I talked about, the research and discussion that goes into the budget that the council does, and we realize, oh, we submitted this thinking that this is happening. Once we realize it, we withdraw it. So that was not a cut. So I want to really take away the misconception that the council just wakes up and throws a dart at the board and goes, okay, that sounds like a good number. Let me just cut that. You know, it's not that at all. I think every year we meet with the administration, all different department heads, and we explain to them what our priorities are. And that priority is obviously sometimes vastly different than what the administration wants. And I think the administration is used to, again, as I've talked about before, not necessarily a divided council, but a council that wasn't as unified when it comes to fiscal responsibility. And so they're used to being able to whip votes to their advantage and being able to make sure that the council didn't get to that magic number 6. And so that has not been happening in recent years, obviously, at least not in the past 4 years that I've been on the council. And I think that's what frustrates them. So now their new tactic is to say, this council doesn't know what they're doing, and they're making a mess of the budget. And it's, you know, instead of listening to the priorities that the council, and not just the council, but the people of New Bedford want, they'd rather just lie and misrepresent what's actually taking place.
Well, 508-996-0500, if you have any questions on the budget process. I got a quick question before we get to take a break. You talk about how long of a night it is, and anybody that stayed up for it knows how long of a night it is. Why is it just on one night? Why can't it be broken up over multiple sessions?
I don't know. I guess that's a good question. I think it's just one of those situations where once we're there, we just want to get it done and finish it. Essentially because also what I've talked about before, we have certain deadlines that we have to meet to make sure the budget is approved on time before the end of the fiscal, before the fiscal year begins in July. So I think it's just more so for time sensitivity and making sure it gets done.
I'm just thinking it'd be easier for you guys if you did it over two nights, you know?
Potentially. I guess that's something we could discuss, but I hate to be one of those people that says, well, this is how it's always been done.
Right.
But I guess to hurt myself, I'll just say, yeah, this is how it's always been done. I hate that answer, but I like felt it start to come out of my mouth, and I'm like, oh, Shane, I hate when I ask something like, well, just because it's always been done that way doesn't mean it has to be. I don't know. That's how it's always been done. So I just, we're used to it now at this point.
Hey, I'm just trying to help you get to bed earlier. That's all I'm trying to do. All right, we got to take a break here. If you have any questions, 508-996-0500. We'll be back to wrap things up with Council President Burgo in just a bit. All right, welcome back in. Council President Burgo is with us, and he's going to give us a rundown of all the meetings coming up this week.
Yeah, so I just always want to start off with our neighborhood meetings. So Tuesday, which is tomorrow, June 17th at 6:30 p.m., you have the A.J. Gomes School Neighborhood Association, which is run by Buddy Andrade. And then we don't have necessarily assigned councilor liaison, but a number of our councilors, Derek Baptiste, Brian Gomes, and Linda Morad, often rotate and attend that meeting. Again, that's on on Tuesday, June 17th at 6:30 p.m. at the Gomes School. And then on Wednesday, June 18th at 6 p.m., we have the Clark's Point Neighborhood Group, and that's run by Celine Soriva, and our counselor liaison is Ryan Pereira. And then in regards to our council meetings this week, tomorrow, June 17th at 6 p.m., one of our council committees that hasn't met in a while is Veterans Affairs, Elderly, Youth, Health, Housing, and Disability Issues, which is chaired by Councillor Carney and vice-chaired by Councillor Sean Oliver. So they'll be meeting at 6 p.m. That's a committee of the whole, so we'll all be there. And then following that meeting at 7 p.m. is Appointments and Briefings. And then Wednesday, June 18th at 6:30 p.m., we'll be having a special City Council meeting just to take care of some business that we weren't able to at this last City Council meeting, because a lot of the loan orders and reappointments need 8 votes, and we only had 7 councilors present. So, and then after that special City Council meeting at 7 p.m., we'll have a Finance Committee meeting. And all of those meetings will be held in the City Council chamber. And if you aren't able to come in person, you can watch them live at home, whether online or later on cable access, YouTube or website on the meeting links.
All right, let's play our last break, and then we'll be back to wrap things up. All right, that does it for another edition of the discussion with Council President Berger. We'll have you here.